We have been reading your book for several days, and we have also discussed in the book for five days in a row. So I guess we almost know by memory. It was very interesting, and we have great discussions and disagreements and agreements. You will see it. So we are excited. We'll begin with the first question, if you don't mind. The first question will be Brian.
Hi, Ms. Rubin. Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. Okay, do you think it is necessary or appropriate for a woman to use her body to advance in an organization?
No. I mean, not if you mean sexually or seductively, but we are embodied creatures and are identified, women and men, first as women and men. So that sort of establishes the parameters for interaction. And as you probably know, I mean, open door policies and so on, they're all, so much of the workplace now is kind of a gender minefield. Just look at the lawsuits that are arising and the fears among women in the U.S. Armed Services. So it's one doesn't just, I think to use that expression, quote unquote, using one's body, it's kind of a minefield of issues. And so one does and doesn't use it, if that makes sense.
What do you think?
What do you think, Brian? What do you think?
That's a good question, because he was. That's the reason.
Yes.
That's the reason we call you.
I guess the discussion was, were we interpreting some of the things you wrote was I interpreting some of the things you wrote too literally or not? In terms of that.
Oh, I think what you mean is probably the section on, or at least one of the sections on how women in India have or other places have just used their femininity. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, well, there, of course. I mean, I'm a big believer in that. And I think women still have very different ways of communicating that are essential to make the most of.
Sure.
Thank you. Sha, we have another question for you. Sha?
Good afternoon, Ms. Rubin.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much. Ms. Rubin, when you say rely on yourself for both your suffering and your triumph, is it not...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you very well. I don't know if you have a speakerphone there, but can you move a little closer to the audio device?
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. When you say rely on yourself for both your suffering and for your triumph, is it not contradicting with your concept of master the mesh? And how can we win trust of other if we are so self-centered? Moreover, isn't it seems like a selfish approach?
When Dr. Marotte sent me this question, I didn't quite understand it. How do you see the contradiction?
When you say, for me, it's like more self-centered approach, and for creating a monster mesh, like it's like networking, right? Getting along with other people. If you're so much focused on yourself, then it's, for me, it seems difficult to get along other people. I mean, if you're so much focused for your own things, like for your own goals, then how can we,
Well, first of all, I think one of the major themes of The Princesa, and actually, even though I have titled this book to be a reflection of my reading of The Prince, Machiavelli's great work, which you've read, have you all read The Prince?
I just know a little bit that he also says, like, people, they are motivated by their own, like, desires. They also, yeah. Like, it's about that.
Yes, you're right. But the truth about the Princesa, which I did not really disclose in the book, is that my great guiding principle in writing this book was Mohandas Gandhi, whose notion of satyagraha is, I think, often loosely translated as peaceful conflict. So that you you instigate a set of changes that will result in greater harmony. And sometimes that instigation is can be a conflictual process. But so when you use the word selfish, I mean, Gandhi's great goal was to establish greater good and lesser suffering. And so I think that that is what I've tried to make clear, at least that part in the Princesa, which is that anything you win for yourself, if it is to be valued over the long term being your life, it has to also include the good of others. You cannot just benefit yourself and see others continue to suffer or to have less, because that will ultimately have an impact on your own enjoyment of whatever gains you make. So I don't see selfishness as being part of it, in fact, just the opposite.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Rubin.
You're very welcome.
We have Hasima now with a question.
Okay.
Hello, Ms. Rubin, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Actually, I have a very interesting question in my mind. I just read your book, and I appreciate the unconventional ideas that you just preach about the women. And I was wondering that if you are just given a chance to rewrite the book, so what portion of the book you would like to, you know, delete or add?
Yeah, well, you know, so far these questions have been fascinating, and this one, the one you ask is especially fascinating. You know, when I wrote The Princesa, I thought strategy was the most brilliant method for success, for achieving success. Mm-hmm. That if you had a goal in mind, all you had to do was articulate that goal and then almost work backwards, step by step, for how to achieve it, mm-hmm. how to achieve the goal, meaning whom do you meet? What do you do? Where do you go? How do you ask for what you want? I thought that, I thought if you knew those things, you really didn't need anything else.
Okay.
But I have since found, or life has taught me, that strategy is a good vocabulary, a great means for achievement, but it is extremely limited. And the more I read of my mentor Machiavelli's work, the more I find that he thought the same thing. In fact, Machiavelli said in one of his writings that strategy is useful only 10% of the time, which, he said, is when God is sleeping. And so he often wrote about fortune and fate and chance. And the limits of strategy, so if I were to rewrite this book now, I would write about strategy in a less enthusiastic way, and maybe more about other ways to achieve success.
Wow. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
And Cherry will have a next question.
Yes.
Hello, Ms. Rubin. How are you?
And how are you? Who am I speaking to?
My name is Cheryl.
Hello.
Hello. My question is concerning the power of goodbye that you cover, you know, at the end of the book that you touch on. I was really thinking about, you know, when is it that one, I guess you could say, throws in the towel? What advice could you give to help the Princesa determine the best time to leave an organization? You know, when does one stop trying in pursuing what, you know, they want or what she would want?
Well, I'm going to turn this question around to you, but I'll answer very quickly, but I'd like to know what your experience has been. So one way that that I used as a guide was when another idea started to attract me so that I felt I could say goodbye to an organization or a situation because my imagination started to click in another mode and something else drew me to it. Then I felt really safe in saying goodbye, and I felt that that I had kind of a new world to conquer. But tell me, have you? You must have had an experience like this. How did you handle it?
Well, actually, I eventually arrived to that place that you've just described. But there was a catalyst and an impetus. You know, when things got a bit painful, that is. Psychologically painful, you know, to, you know, continue in the battle or in the struggle, and where I was just beginning to feel that I was not getting anywhere, you know, trying different approaches or, you know, some of these tactics, in fact, that you, you know, delineate in the book.
Yes.
And there's just really a point, I guess I would say in my spirit, when I knew that, And then really shifted in my thinking about other possibilities, other opportunities, other settings. So it's that kind of a process that I've had personally and experienced personally.
Yes, I think we're saying this something very similar, which is that yes, often. You find that you've just reached a dead end, and none of the strategies work. So better to save your energy and save yourself for the next battle.
Absolutely. On that, I certainly, certainly agree. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We have David now with one question. Victor Davis.
Okay.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I read your book, and I was very intrigued by it as an African-American male, and I also recommended it to my niece, who is the vice president of J.P. Morgan Chase, in her, you know, career moves to read before she went any further. My question is, do you believe your book can be transcended to other minority groups as a guide to obtaining and keeping power?
Totally. Yes, because... I wrote this book as a woman working in book publishing, and most of my authors were CEOs or white men of a certain level of status and achievement, and they treated me as if I were, certainly not their equal, much, much less, and so I felt not just second class in that context, but third class or fourth class or classless, actually. And so that's the spirit in which I wrote the book, as somebody who needed to find a voice and needed to find status that I was not granted by the social order. Does that make sense? Am I making that?
Yeah, totally.
So I think the answer to your question is very much so, and I'm glad to hear that you, as an African American male, have found something of value in this book. I appreciate that very much.
Thank you. I appreciate you writing it.
You're welcome.
We have a diversity in this class, Miss Robin.
It's beautiful. What a beautiful chorus of voices.
Yeah, the funny thing, I was calling the princessa, and you call it the princess.
It doesn't matter.
It's always a princess. We have Riaz, that he will ask a question for you. Riaz.
Hello.
Yes. I'm Riaz. I am pleased to speak with you. My question is that... you mentioned that at the page number 105 in the Princessa, oppose power, do not fight it directly. How can I apply this strategy an educational leader?
I'm not sure I heard you clearly. Did you ask what is the relevance to leaders in education?
After this degree, I have to work as an education leader, and I have to oppose from the teacher union and bureaucracy.
Oh.
How can I tackle this problem? I have to oppose, but not directly.
Tell me a little bit about how you've handled the problems that you face or the conflicts that you face to date.
Yeah.
How can I handle this situation?
At the present time, I have learned about the conflict and I have different technique, but still I am learning, not I am in the practical field.
Well, let me ask you, because I'm very interested in what you're facing. Can you give me an example of a conflict that seems to have no solution?
Okay. You mean there is a conflict? Because in education system, at the present time, teacher union and bureaucracy, they create a lot of problem, especially in the female educations. And they use a lot of fund, and we could not provide education to the female, especially female.
And you couldn't provide education to females?
Properly. Actually, we want to provide education to female. We want to promote education in Pakistan female, but still there is a barrier.
Ah, okay. I see what you're saying. That's a very interesting problem and a very interesting challenge. I would imagine it's such a cultural, it's so specific to the Pakistani culture that how you present yourself in the conflict is really key, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
I guess the question is, what I'm trying to say is that the issue that you face, the conflicts that you face are so culturally specific.
Yeah.
I would think I have very little to say to you that you must have much more to say to me about this situation, which sounds very fascinating.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. I have one student, she just came. She actually was my student last year when we read your book last year. So she just came because she's very curious and she has a question. Her name is Candice.
Okay. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great. Thank you. I have a question for you regarding how you feel the concepts have really evolved with women to modern day as coming to the United States and where you think we are currently.
Women, you mean?
Women. In the ideas of kind of the Machiavellian culture, theories.
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. And sometimes I feel real despair about the progress that women are making in public life. It seems like the culture is pushing women more and more out of the corporate mainstream, giving us more and more signals that we cannot succeed. The last time I looked, the percentage of women holding board seats was the same as it was 10 or 15 years ago. And I think that unless women can achieve membership of corporate and not-for-profit boards, we really are not powerful. We're not making our voices heard because so many important decisions, in my view, happen at the board level. And our representation there is very minimal. So, and, you know, and in Congress, in public life, there women have advanced, but the numbers are still minority numbers. So what will it take to get women to really speak up and take public office and fight for the jobs that they so richly deserve? I'm not sure I know, but I think the education system has to change in this country, not and in Pakistan from what we've just heard, but in this country just as much. Candy is your name. What do you think? What do you think has to happen?
Well, I think that the American culture kind of has its duplicity in and of itself, that it represents that women are equal, but you know, the idea of the princess is still revered as the negative connotation, where the man is assertive. And it's that underlying, you know, accepted ideas as opposed to what we say we're doing. And I think what has to happen is there has to be some call out on it. You know, people aren't being called out on it. They're just playing by the rules that are underneath as opposed to the ones we say we're playing by.
How would you call them out on it?
I think that when there is a dual standard, it needs to be called a dual standard. So when a female is held to a certain standard that males haven't in the past, maybe they need to be, you know, stand up for that, and they need to say, listen, no, this is not just applicable now. If this is applicable from now on, that's fine, but I want to see this on the other gender as well.
Exactly, yes, yes. How many of you in the class have read Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, which is about the same issues of gender and essentially kind of a corporate underclass? She calls them women, but could be anybody.
We have a few people here that said they read that.
Okay. Yeah. And I think what, you know, that book is interesting because the author, Sheryl Sandberg, puts the burden, the onus for change on women and not on, she doesn't do what you're saying. She doesn't call out corporations for their responsibility in changing policies in order to make the world more equal, the corporate world more equal. So it's still like we're, the corporate world can get away with whatever inequalities that are, or biases that are so entrenched, people don't even call them biases.
Absolutely.
And I, so I think a book like that is part of the problem and not part of the solution.
Yeah. Great. Thank
but
you so much.
They need to keep, the corporations and policymakers need to be called out on their biases.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Dil. Dil is from Pakistan, and she has a question as well.
Okay.
Hi, Ms. Robin. How
Hello.
Are you?
Hello. Good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. I just heard that you, one of the guiding forces to write this book is Gandhi. I wanted to know what other guiding forces are there. Or inspired you to write this book?
Oh, well, there's another wonderful book that I could mention, and maybe some of you have read it. It's called The Woman Warrior by Maxine Hong Kingston. Okay. And Maxine Hong Kingston is a Chinese-American who grew up with grandmothers very steeped in traditional ways of seeing and speaking, of achieving power and so on. And that is just it's a beautiful, marvelous book.
Thank you very much, Ms. Robin.
You're welcome.
Now, Hamid also has a question. Hamid is also from Pakistan.
Okay, hello, Hamid.
Hello, Ms. Robin, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. My question is, you have mentioned so many examples of women in this book. And my question is, did you study each and every biography of these women?
And
And how much time did it take to complete this book?
Those are very interesting questions also. Well, I must have read, gosh, I don't remember now, maybe, well, I'll just say hundreds of biographies, hundreds, to try to understand the underlying pattern of how women or anyone who is a quote-unquote underdog can succeed when everything in the culture, everything in the power structure works against her or him. So, really, hundreds. And it was just such a pleasure to read these biographies and memoirs, and it was one of the greatest educational experiences I've had. And it took, gosh, I had a full-time job when I was writing this book. It took me, I guess, maybe 3 years to write it. But when I look back, I think I was writing the book even as a kid when I would watch inequalities take place. I would probably take a mental note even without thinking that I would ever write a book about it. You know, you see somebody being unfairly challenged or criticized, and you, even today, probably you all take mental notes and maybe we'll go on to write a book or stage a play or go on a crusade or do something. I mean, we save up all this string sometimes we're not even aware of doing.
Thank you, Mr. Rubin.
You're welcome.
I don't know how much time we have. We still have some questions.
Okay, go ahead. I have a few more minutes.
Yay! Okay, so here's Jerry. Jerry, good afternoon.
Hello, Jerry.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My question is as follows. Should we strive to develop our young daughters into princesses in training?
I love that question. And honestly, I think our young daughters are princesses. They are often young, often girls are fearless, and they don't have any sort of concern that they're not good enough, they're not strong enough, they're just like rockets. And what happens is the culture teaches them to disown that power, to disown that native inborn power. And so it's really not that they need, maybe they need more reassurance that who they are at their young and fearless stage, they can remain. But somehow a lot of culture comes to bear, as we've talked about here already, to kind of shake them off their perch, off their pedestal. And they become self-doubters, and, I mean, we all do this. We all doubt ourselves, even though we sort of deep down know the right way to do things and the right path to go. We question ourselves. We our confidence is bruised from lots of experience, and so we lose our sense of self. Mm. So I both agree that kids, or daughters, even sons, maybe need a little bit of a boost every now and then, sort of like a booster shot. But basically, we could learn a lot from our daughters.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ms. Harry Rubin, we have two questions more. Here's a scene coming, which is also from Pakistan.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. My question is, do you agree that Princesa is all about the battle of power acquiring in personal and professional life of women, no matter what strategy or tactics are used?
Yes, I do.
That's easy.
Good.
And Nasrullah have the last question.
Okay.
Hello, Miss Robin. How are you?
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. My question is about the great woman of Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto. You wrote about her that her success was temporary. And I think because of her sacrifices and reputation, she, her party, Pakistan People Party, won election in 2008, and she still lives in the hearts of middle class people of Pakistan. Is it not a permanent success?
Yes. You know, I wrote The Princessa in, I think it was published in 1997. That's a long time ago, and certainly before Prime Minister Bhutto's death, and before so much had, I mean, so much had happened to her before her comeback, for sure. So I agree with you that she does live in the hearts of middle-class people, and that that is a permanent success that no one can take away from her.
And you are right, because her second attempt was very successful.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rubin. We are so happy that you have some time for us. I'm really happy to hear all your answers. It's very enlightened for everybody. I appreciate your time a lot. Do you want to say something, your last words? I mean, your last message.
I enjoyed these questions very much. They also stimulate my thinking, and I wish you all the best. Dr. Marotte, if any of your students would like to send a further follow-up email to me with issues, or perhaps we can engage in more specific questions and answers. I know whose name I cannot recall, who asked about education and leadership in Pakistan. In that case especially, I would be interested in pursuing a more intricate conversation. But your students sound so enlightened and so inspired that if whomever would like to be in touch with me, I'd be willing to correspond with.
They're wonderful. They're wonderful students. Very nice.
Very
high IQs.
Well, listen, enjoy your Sunday, and I hope we can stay in touch.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dr. Marotte.
Thank you.
That was great.
So we have this taping, so we can edit it.